is where they were going with it. Now, I really enjoyed the movie. I think it's on par, or maybe even exceeds my enjoyment of the first movie. Loved it. Loved all the jokes. I loved the dynamic of it. I liked how it poked fun at the sequels and sequels in general. I loved the Ice Cube line. Made me laugh. The credit sequence, of course, leaves you walking out of the theater and you're just flying on cloud nine. But is it the greatest comedy sequel of all time, Sean? Can we answer that right now? Or is this something like 10 years from now, maybe we can look back and say and answer that? I don't know. What do you think?
I hate anything called of all time. It's just, those three words should not be used in any kind of description because it's not possible. Unless it's the definitive Avatar is the highest grossing movie of all time. Because it is, you know. Financially, you can point at the numbers and the statistics tell you. What about Jump Street, you know, can you point to say definitively this is the great, especially something like comedy, which is so subjective. If you don't like the Jump Street jokes and the meta-ness of it all was exhausting for you, and it wasn't for me. I enjoyed it. I liked it as much as I liked the first one. But there's no way that I'm ranking it as, like, I guess to be the one of the greatest comedy sequels of all time, it's something that everybody's quoting infinitely. It's something that you're going back to repeatedly. You can't wait to see it again. And it's not there for me. And I don't know if it's there for just about anybody. I think it was a successful movie. And the studio was delighted that a critic or a junketeer gave them that quote because they were able to use it in the advertisements. But let's not get carried away with ourselves.
Well, so name a comedy sequel that you would say, 22 Jump Street's great, but it's not X, because comedy sequels are really difficult to do. And I look back and, you know, because I was thinking about that quote, and I'm looking back at all the comedy sequels that are my favorites. A lot of them are in the 80s. Right. You know, I really like Beverly Hills Cop 2. I really like Christmas Vacation, which is sort of like a third part. But it's technically a sequel, I guess. Well,
yeah, so you went with the two that I would right off the bat, too. I thought the second Beverly Hills Cop is as good, if not a little bit better, than the first one.
Mm-hmm. I also like Another 48 Hours. So sue me. I love the opening of that movie.
Oh, that's a good one also. You know, and for me, I'd probably go European Vacation before I'd go Christmas. But
really? You would put European Vacation ahead of Christmas Vacation?
I would, yeah. European Vacation has some big laughs in it.
Well, it's just, it's wacky. It is just wacky.
But, you know, if we're counting animation, I mean, Toy Story 2, Toy Story 3, are they comedies or are they just sort of family movies? Are we talking – do they have to be broad
comedies? I think they're family comedies, you know. I think, yeah, it's then you can get into all kinds of discussions. But, yeah, I could see where it is. But I think it does rank high. But I do agree with you, though, on the meta-ness of it. And this is a movie, this is, I think, an issue. Critics love it. Critics love that sort of meta interpretations. Yeah, because it's a little bit smart and it has fun with it. But you look at a movie like Cabin in the Woods, which critics were just like, oh my God, it's like it was like the second coming. But audiences didn't really jive with it so much.
Right.
So I don't know if audiences want that meta-ness, want kind of the self-reflection or the, you know, the poking fun at what we're doing. And I don't know. I think it may work better. It might be more accessible in a movie like 22 Jump Street than it was in Cabin in the Woods.
Well, and this is – let's make a comparison to just – let's stay in Lord and Miller's – Phil Lord and Chris Miller's wheelhouse and just talk about the Lego movie. I think the Lego movie worked their type of humor into a package that was extremely accessible to everybody. And I think Lego Movie is way more accessible than Jump Street was. Like the biggest joke to me that landed in Jump Street was when they flew down to spring break and the shot of the airplane going over the sign, which is just the biggest Michael Bay, you know, shot that you've ever seen. Because I think Bay puts it in almost every movie he's ever filmed. And those guys put it in deliberately and it made me laugh my ass off. But no one else knows. Like not no one else. But, you know, most people don't know that. They think it's just a shot of the airplane bringing them to spring break. But it was so deliberate and so funny. And I think that so many of those jokes are just going to zoom over people's heads. But in the Lego movie, they landed. You know, they
But there's a Benny Hill reference, too, that I don't know how many people
yes,
would have gotten. But yeah, the
College of Bernard Hill or something like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a little more inside.
Yeah.
Then, but you have to laugh when they walk in and is and Ice Cube's office. It looks like a giant ice cube. That just. I don't know. They got me. And I got to say, the fight, and if you can't tell by now, we're spoiling this movie, but the fight at the end between Jonah Hill and the actress, I don't have the IMDb page. What's her name?
I don't remember.
She is so good in this movie. But that fight, hey, if anything, it's winning an MTV Movie Award for Best Fight.
Oh,
because that was just a brilliant fight between
the two. One of the things that they said they did after, I heard them talking about this in interviews, was when they realized, after shooting a scene or two on the campus, and they realized how old they looked compared to all the extras that they hired. And that's like Jonah Hill said that they went back and rewrote so many jokes then targeting how old they looked. And I thought those were some of the funniest ones in the movie.
Jillian Bell is her name. She lands a lot of those jokes. That's all she does, yeah, is torture Jonah Hill on with how old he looks the entire movie. And it's really, really funny stuff. But, so I liked it.
You know why this comedy works, though? This comedy also works because you get certain comedies that try to root themselves in what's pop culture and, you know, of the moment then, mm-hmm. and then they don't last. And I think that these movies are going to be funny and remain funny because they're poking fun of their world, but it doesn't have to rely on what we know now. You can go back and watch the first 21 Jump Street, and it's still funny because it's making fun of the show that you're familiar with. And even with 22 Jump Street, there are no, like some of the jokes in it are so timely in a weird sort of way, like the Tracy Morgan reference and the Maya Angelou references. And, you know, they almost had this whole different context to them because of things that we know right now. But a year from now, we might not even remember that how they tied into modern things like that. So I think it's smart for those reasons, too.
I also love one of the most inventive fight sequence moves I think I've ever seen put on film is when in the middle of a spring break party, Channing Tatum defeats one of the bad guys by picking up a partier and swinging her around and using her feet as a weapon. I wanted more of that. I wanted an entire insane action set piece with them just using drunken spring breakers as weapons.
Yes, they really should have.
That would have, like, if they would have continued that gag, I would have been in heaven.
All right, but I came out of Jump Street and had a conversation with somebody right off the bat, and maybe I'm wrong because you're bringing up some really funny parts. I said that I laughed harder at Neighbors than I did at Jump Street. Would you agree with that or no?
I could see that. You know, it's interesting too because I'd like to compare how much you laugh from something that's original, that these characters you're seeing for the first time versus characters that you're already familiar with.
Right.
Because when you're already familiar with characters, you really enjoy watching them and you laugh at them. But you're not those laughs aren't necessarily fueled by surprises.
Right.
And I think you may get meatier sort of laughs that you remember from a movie that's full of surprises, and that's why maybe Neighbors is giving that to people, just because it's, you know, these are new characters, we're not experienced with this world, you know, whereas in 22 Jump Street, we're laughing more because of the familiarity that we have with these characters already, that we sort of expect what they're going to do, even if it is new, and even if it is fun and smart and refreshing in a lot of ways, we sort of expect it, whereas we don't expect it from Neighbors. And I think the unexpected comedies are the ones that we remember the most, like you do with the first 21 Jump Street.
Neighbors, to me, is more quotable. Or at least my friends have been using quotes from Neighbors this whole summer. Like, we'll try and work in your baby has AIDS somehow into conversations. Or, like, we'll show up at screenings and I hear some guy in the back, he's like, hooty-hoo, hooty-hoo. It just makes me laugh. Every single time it makes me laugh. So
it is. But
they're both funny. They're both definitely funny.
They're both very funny, and I'm glad that they both exist because they both really make me laugh. But if I put Neighbors against the first 21 Jump Street, because I laughed, man, that first 21 Jump Street, I lost it. And Neighbors, I think, is really fun. And this is the one issue I have with Nicholas Stoller, because I feel like they peak, his movies peak, like, in the middle. And then the last quarter of it isn't as, and maybe it's because we're laughed out or whatever it is, but I just always feel like the last quarter of his movies aren't as strong as the other 75%.
Right. But I'd argue that about Jump Street. Like, when they got to Spring Break, there were some funny parts, but then I was like, I'm starting to feel the 2 hours now.
Yeah, to a certain degree. But then I thought the Spring Break scene was really funny. I thought the fight at the end was fantastic between right. Jonah Hill and Jillian Bell. I thought it was one of the greatest fights ever on screen.
Right.
And so, I don't know, to a certain degree, I really liked the end. But, you know, you could have more fun with the end of an action comedy than you would a movie like Neighbors, because yeah. you have these big action set pieces that you're saving for its finale, whereas in Neighbors, you don't really have a giant action set piece that you could save for the finale. You just sort of have the logical conclusion of this story of this neighbor and his frat.
Sure. Let me ask you a question. And again, if you've made it this far and we haven't spoiled the movie for you already, back out now. But there's an end credit sequence to Jump Street, and it makes fun of the fact that they could keep doing this endlessly, you know, with all the different ways to team them up and put another number in front of it. If they're offered the chance to do another one, do you want to see more of them, or was this enough?
You know, I feel like that ending, and it's funny because of that ending, before the movie comes out, of course, we go to writers and we figure out some features that we want to write around the movie, and one of our writers pitched an idea of, I'm going to come up with a bunch of concepts for 23 versus, you know, to 32 Jump Street. And I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. That sounds like something that could go with it. And then we watch the movie, and the end credits is exactly that. But, you know, it would have to really change things up. I like the characters, but this definitely feels definitive in a lot of ways. If it does really well, of course, the studio is going to be like, well, figure out a third one. Figure it
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
And I think they would figure it out, but I don't know if Phil Lord and Chris Miller would do it.
Right.
I think these guys are going to be tremendously busy. They are the hottest directing duo in Hollywood right now, I think.
Yes.
And they could do just about anything.
Turning down Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
They're like, nah, we don't need it.
Yeah, so, you know, I think they're going to go and direct solo. They're going to direct together. They're going to produce. They're going to probably have their own shop. They're just going to do everything. So if there is a third one, I can't see the two of them doing it. And, if the two of them don't do it, I can't see it being as successful as the first two. So I'm a fan of those first two. But I'm a fan who knows when to walk away, and I feel like this is when you walk away. This is where you go out on top. Don't be Michael Jordan. Don't return to the Washington Wizards and try to, you know, let's just walk away on top. I always respect the ball players who win it, and then just that's it. You know, wipe your hands. I'm out. Sort of like George Costanza going out on the joke. That's it. I made them laugh. Walk away.
They're walking out of Lego Movie. They're not coming back for that sequel.
Nope.
They passed on Ghostbusters. I don't think they're going to do another Jump Street. I think that was their way of saying, hey, we're beating you to the joke. We get it. This premise could go on forever, but we're not going to let it. They really do have enough confidence in themselves that they don't feel like they have to cling to a franchise that's working, a la, you know, someone like Brett Ratner, who made Rush Hour movies until they basically forced him out the door.
Yeah. What was your favorite fake Jump Street movie from those end credits?
I like the one with Seth Rogen. That one was pretty funny.
That was good. I like the Richard Grieco one.
Grieco got shortchanged.
Jump Street Generations, is that what
that
they called it?
That was really fun. Grieco, Johnny Depp got and Peter DeLuise got a really
I
good
know.
Worked them into the pot, and then Grieco gets tossed in the end credits. Come on!
I know, he did. He did get shortchanged. But you know what? It was my favorite one. Generations.
That one was funny, and I liked when they came back after the Seth Rogen one, and Jonah Hill was like, "What contract negotiations?" The movie is really funny. It's very dense, and there's a ton of jokes per minute. And if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's really funny.
You know, let's finish off this podcast. It is June, kind of middle of June. A lot of kids are going to be leaving school. We have a lot of last days of school coming up over the next couple of weeks. That last day of school, man, when I was a kid, was just the best. Of course, you know, when I didn't have a summer job, when I was like, you know, 12 years old, I don't know, 14. Before you start working, for the man over the summertime to earn some money. You know, you that last day of school was like this magical day. And, you know, you didn't really, maybe you would sit and watch a movie or something. And even the teachers, you could tell the teachers are just, you know, ripping to get out.
Yeah.
And you have this whole summer.
Trying to get kids to sign your yearbook. Trying to get the hot girl to sign your yearbook.
Trying to desperately make up for your misgivings throughout the year. But you know what? You look at the quote-unquote last day of school genre in movies. There aren't a ton of, like, instantly recognizable movies. I think the two that we're going to pull out go beyond those two. And it's difficult to find really super memorable last day of school movies. I feel like there should be more of them.
Well, there are movies that have scenes of the last day of school, but they're not about that. Like, I almost went with Say Anything, which has a good... Because I love the guy who needs to meet the girl before they go away for the summer type thing.
Mm.
And that's a component of Say Anything, but it isn't, like, the whole movie. You know, like, the movies that we both chose are... They're rooted in those last days, and it's really important. And I think that a lot of times you see good scenes that take place in the last day of school of all the kids sort of – like Grease. Grease has a last day of school type
Grease
thing.
Does have a good last day of school.
Yeah, but it's not the whole movie. So we had to try and really limit it to movies that were focused on and need to exist because of the last day of school.
Yes, my movie, of course, this is one of my favorite movies of all time, is Dazed and Confused. And interestingly enough, Dazed and Confused – came out in theaters on September 24th, 1993. I apologize. Technically, it's not a summer movie. But why? Like, this is like strategic planning. Why would you put a movie like Dazed and Confused to come out after school begins in September? This feels like a movie like Dazed and Confused. It was coming out now. It would come out this weekend.
Well, I mean, is it because of, like, no one knew who Richard Linklater was? No one knew who this cast was? I mean,
probably.
Maybe this was like a... Yeah, they kind of figured it was going to be some type of, you know, art house film that was going to appeal to a smaller crowd, but boy, is it had legs.
Yeah, it premiered at Toronto. So it premiered at Toronto Film Festival September 10th, 1993. Came out September 24th, 1993. And, you know, this is one of those quintessential last day of school movies. This is a movie that truly celebrates the last day of school. The entire film takes place on the last day of school. It's a cast that are full of names that you love. Ben Affleck is tremendous in this film. This is one of my favorite Ben Affleck roles are the roles where he is a nasty badass. I love him in Dazed and Confused. I love him in Boiler Room. Mm-hmm. I love it when he's not the hero. Whenever he's just like this, like, skeevy sort of guy that you love to hate. Nobody does it better than Ben Affleck. Adam Goldberg is tremendous in this movie as, like, the neurotic Jewish guy who's just, like, boiling over, and he's got all these built-up, pent-up frustrations about himself and his life and where he is. Parker Posey is fantastic in it.
Oh, she's so good. McConaughey's first role, obviously.
All right. I mean, everybody. Jason London, Joey Lauren Adams, who was like, she was a really cute it girl around those times.
Yep.
You know, this is Empire Records, Clerks. Not Clerks, Swingers.
Mallrats. Yeah.
Mila Jovovich. She's like, she has like maybe two lines in the movie, if that. But I just remember that shot of her just sitting in that awesome chair. Remember that chair that he has in his room? That one dude that they're going to go have the party at his house, but his parents figure it out. And he's got that awesome, like, chair in his room. I always wanted one of those chairs when I was watching this growing up. Anthony Rapp is in this movie. So it's just such an awesome movie that celebrates sort of the ending of one period of your life that you're sort of in that kind of room where, you know, behind you is everything that happened at school, and ahead of you is this next chapter in your life, and you're sort of stuck in this one moment celebrating the fact that you've made it this long in your life, and no other movie does it better than Dazed and Confused. Quick, Sean, your movie, is another one that speaks to at least our generation.
Well, you kind of took mine, and so then I had to scramble. But I found another really good one, and I'm going with Can't Hardly Wait.
Yes.
which is yet again, I brought up that topic of the guy who needs to meet the girl of his dreams because he's running out of time. You know, they're going to go away to school. It's summer. They're going to go away to college. It's summertime. Their paths won't cross, and he has one last chance. And Ethan Embry was going to be, you know, the next big thing. And Jennifer Love Hewitt was in her prime, you know. And it just had such a tremendous cast. Seth Green was really good in it. Lauren Ambrose was hysterical. You had some really good cameos. Melissa Joan Hart. Was it Ryan Reynolds? Ryan Reynolds come back as the college guy?
No, that's what's his name from American Pie.
Chris Pratt? No, Chris Biggs?
No, this is how bad it is.
Films that like when you it's one of those films that's set at a party.
Chris Klein. Is it Chris Klein? Is he the one?
I think he might be.
I don't even know. That's how bad this is.
Well, it's one of those films that takes place at a party. It has to maintain that energy. It has the different ecosystems of the social groups from high school, you know, down pat, and just was a really fun, hey, we're moving on from this one phase of our life. We probably belong to this particular group of social group, but it's our turn. It's our time to reinvent ourselves. And it had the perfect example of the B-list kid trying to date the A-list girl and realizing that she's always sort of been interested in him the whole time too. So it had all those elements that worked really well. I'm going with that one because I think if you can pop it in the DVD player right now, you're going to connect with it on some level, regardless of what your age. So that's the one I'm going to go to.
Yeah, I just remember Jennifer Love Hewitt. I mean, she in this stage in her career, in this movie, she was the perfect dream girl. When you look at like high school dream girl movies, she was everything in that movie. And it's interesting when you look at this cast. Some people, Jason Segel is in this movie. He plays the watermelon guy. Selma Blair plays girl Mike hits on number one.
Okay. Jenna Elfman is an angel.
I remember Jenna Elfman. That was a strange detour that movie makes. And keep in mind, this never happens in real life.
It's Jerry O'Connell.
He plays Jerry O'Connell. That's who it was. Yes, he plays the college guy that comes back and he's like, college is miserable. I can't get any girls. It's awful. It's awful being a freshman, which is completely true. That movie hits at that, and it's got a great soundtrack. And it really speaks to, again, that space that you're in between, you know, leaving school and the next chapter in your life. And you're sort of celebrating everything that you are to that day and everything that you can become and taking chances that maybe you wouldn't have taken previously. And a lot of people take big chances in that movie. And they mostly pay off, which is hard for normal people because in a normal environment, you're not going to land the dream girl.
No. Not Jennifer Love Hewitt in her prime, no.
Unfortunately, no matter how many Jenna Elfmans you wander into in the street. But don't let us stop you from taking those risks in your life, because a lot of those kinds of risks shape you as the person that you will become. So if there is a dream girl or guy that you are deeply in love with, and it is the last day of school is coming up, and you've never said anything to them, you know what? Say it now, because you may regret it. And later on in life, you can look back and you say, hey, at least I took that shot.
Make your pitch.
So watch Dazed and Confused. Watch Can't Hardly Rate. Both of them are filled with characters who are taking risks, and some of them pay off. And so maybe yours will. But yeah, those are the movies that
Let's talk about a movie that takes no risks whatsoever. Clint Eastwood's Jersey Boys. How's that for a transition?
Jersey Boys. Can't Hardly Wait did come out on June 12th, 1998, so that does fit our summer movie mold. And there is a movie that takes advantage of its last day of schoolishness by coming out in June. Dazed and Confused.
What?
Maybe the next time. But speaking of Richard Linklater, he has a movie coming out called Boyhood that we definitely are going to talk about later on in this podcast. And Jersey Boys, we'll talk about that next week as well. Can Clint Eastwood take one of my favorite musicals that I've ever seen on Broadway? I don't usually stand up and do the clapping thing. I'm not usually one of those guys that's just like, bravo, yellow! more. But for Jersey Boys, I did. I was so... That musical just jazzed me up. I'm a big fan of the music. So can Clint Eastwood recreate the magic of that musical on the big screen? Sean, don't answer that question. We will find out next week's podcast. Sean, I hope you have a really great week.
Stay tuned. Yeah, Eric, you too, man. Enjoy yourself.
You too. Enjoy yourself. And you too out there, thank you so much for listening and enjoy your week at the movies.